from her, you bitch!
Great kid! Don't get cocky!
That still only counts as one!
Okay, you people sit tight, hold the fort, and keep the home fires burning. If we're not back by dawn, call the president.
Groovy.
Hello, and welcome back to Good for an Action Movie. I'm one of your hosts, Max Steele.
I'm two of your hosts, Will Thornton.
And we are so excited to talk about a movie that we both really enjoy. At least, I think that we both really enjoy. I know I really enjoy it.
I thought you were going to say both watched. I was going to say, yeah, people might not know. That's very true. Only one of us ever watches the movie, and the other person fakes it.
Yeah, there are a lot. Usually these are very one-sided.
Yeah. I didn't even watch Baywatch. I was all Max.
What?
I just said, mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, I hated that part.
Oh, yeah, remember that part that was really unfunny?
You could make an entire podcast about that. But we are talking about For a Few Dollars More, the middle movie in the trilogy of Sergio Leone's spaghetti westerns. So the reason that I suggested this movie again, just like I suggested Hellboy 2, is that I think this movie does get talked about and gets a lot of its due in terms of, like, people considering it like a really good Western. But I think there's a lot there that a lot of people don't talk about. So I think that's what we're hoping to get into today. So this movie came out in 1964. Again, it is the sequel to A Fistful of Dollars, which kind of introduced the world into the spaghetti Western genre, and to Clint Eastwood after he left Rawhide, into this entire world of shoot 'em ups, cowboys, and bad guys. And the reason that I really like talking about For a Few Dollars More is that I believe that it is the most accessible of all three Dollars movies.
Wow.
So there's For a Few Dollars, or excuse me, there's A Fistful of Dollars, For a Few Dollars More, and then the one that everybody knows is The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. So in terms of accessibility, I think that A Fistful of Dollars is good, but it doesn't do a lot of things that the latter two movies do that make them really good. Watching A Fistful of Dollars is mostly about being introduced to a genre and seeing, like, some fun gunfights and then somehow having some cool dialogue as well. And I do enjoy that movie, but it's essentially a shot-for-shot remake of Yojimbo, an Akira Kurosawa movie, mm-hmm. Which I think detracts from it a little bit. And then fantastic as The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly is, it can be a hard to watch for some people.
It's very long, too.
It's 3 hours and 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's very hard sometimes to watch a movie that is essentially a book. Because when you watch The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, its pacing is like reading a novel.
Yeah.
It's very character-based. It's very just long segments and putting people into different situations. But For a Few Dollars More, I think, is a very lean 2-hour action movie that has really cool characters, really good relationships, and then also has, like, all the tropes of, like, a spaghetti western with the cool music from Ennio Morricone to the really cool directing style of Sergio Leone. So that is the reason that I wanted to talk about it. Do you have any initial thoughts, Will? Sorry, I've been talking for a little bit.
No, that's okay. I want to start by apologizing to everyone. We picked and watched this movie, and then I don't know if you know this, Max, but it's actually not an action movie on IMDb. So
really?
We're finally cheating, although I don't really care. Because no one else cares.
Yeah.
So it is just
turning the podcast off.
Yeah, it's only listed as a Western.
No other tags, right? Just Western.
Just Western. I mean, this is more of an action movie than Baywatch. So
it's more of an action movie than either the Dollars trilogy as well.
Yeah,
I think, definitely.
Yeah. So I mean, this is a movie that at least I think we had both seen before. One thing though that I realized while watching this movie is that I'm pretty sure. So. And you might remember this, Max, and other people might as well. But so I watched this movie, I'm pretty sure, on AMC because AMC used to do these Clint Eastwood marathons. And if you watched a lot of movies on AMC growing up, as I did, because it was a way I watched a ton of, like, you know, popular movies from like the 80s or 70s, they would frequently do these like Clint Eastwood weekends. And I'm like, except for Good and the Bad and the Ugly, which I bought and watched. AMC is how I saw Fistful of Dollars for a few dollars more. Hang 'em High, you know, High Plains Drifter.
Pale Two Rider. Mules for Sister Sarah.
I've never seen that.
I've seen parts of it.
Yeah.
It's pretty good, actually. But, like,
all those old Clint Eastwood movies.
Most of them that are pretty good.
Yeah, like, they're all really good movies. But I remember... this is kind of funny because I remember I watched Good, the Bad, and the Ugly first. It was the first, like, Sergio Leone movie I ever watched. And I don't think that's, like, bad, especially if you're prepared to watch, like, a long, like, classic film. And then I watched Fistful of Dollars and For a Few Dollars More on AMC. And I remember thinking, huh, like, I didn't like those nearly as much as I liked Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. And there was just something very different about watching this movie, which I watched again for the podcast, without commercial breaks, and just, like, in one sitting, that I was, like, basically blown away by how good this movie was and how I didn't really honestly remember that much about the plot. Like, if you would have asked me, I would have been like, Clint Eastwood and Lee Van Cleef are, like, bounty hunters and they team up to, like, catch a guy.
That essentially kind of
which that is the plot. It's not a very complex movie, but I did not remember, like, a single thing about any of the other scenes. Maybe I remember that there was, like, a prison break, but that's about it.
There's chimes.
Yeah, I didn't even remember that.
You didn't remember the chimes?
I did not remember
that. That is the one thing that I remembered. Yeah.
Maybe I was, like, getting it sort of mixed up with the Charles Bronson's harmonica from Once Upon a Time in the West.
Easy to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Very similar, kind of like
it is. Like, it is, yeah, it's a similar thing. Or, like, it's similar to... Peter Lorre's whistling in M, if you've seen that movie. Yeah, every time he kills a child, he whistles in the Hall of the Mountain King as he approaches. And it's very unnerving and creepy. It's a good movie.
I feel like I'd like that.
Yeah.
Not for the child killing. for the artistic license.
So, yeah, I mean, that's sort of my, like, introduction to sort of my history with this movie. But my thoughts are going to be nothing but positive. I was... just sort of blown away by how much better it was than I remembered and how much I enjoyed it thoroughly throughout.
Those are really good points. And thinking back about my experience with this movie too, like the first time I watched it, I rented it on iTunes when I was a little...
what I did this time.
Yeah, yeah. When I was in high school. Another precursor to that, I was obsessed with Westerns in high school. I don't know if I ever told you that, Will. Like, I got into this phase where I watched, like, all the good Westerns. And I think it started when I watched A Fistful of Dollars. I watched the trilogy in order. I watched A Fistful of Dollars for A Few Dollars More. And then The Good, Then the Ugly, which was on Netflix at the time, which is how I just watched all of the movies back then. And then that's how I got into, like, this is debated if it's a Western or not, but The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, right, which is one of my favorite movies too. I love that movie. How I watched High Noon, all the really great Westerns.
But you never saw Stagecoach until I made you watch it.
Very,
recently.
Very, very true. And I'm love Stagecoach too.
So good.
Because I still really like Westerns. Yeah. I think it's such a cool genre. And the reason that I think, and this is not an original opinion, but the really thing that appeals to me about Westerns is that there isn't really, the American culture as a whole isn't really based on a lot of myths. Mm-hmm. A lot of cultures are based on myths. And unfortunately, the myths that were on this continent were promptly destroyed by the colonists who came through. But the one thing that we have that is mythic in quality is the Old West. And I think that a lot of these movies draw upon that, even though that they were made in Italy and financed by Spaniards, I think.
You get that. Shot in Spain. Yeah.
I mean, financed by Italians.
Sergio Leone's Italian. I mean, that's why they're called Spaghetti Westerns. But yeah, I had to look up where this was shot, and this was shot in Spain.
And I remember being in high school and thinking that it was so cool that the entire movie was shot in Italian or whatever language that the respective actor spoke, and then they just dubbed everything.
And I think they're speaking English. It's just all the audio was added in later. They were shooting in, like, there's, like, a term for it. It's when you shoot and just don't worry about the audio. It was just shot silent. Yeah, exactly. And then, but I mean, their mouths are moving. I think they're speaking English.
Really?
Yeah.
I think there are definitely some characters that are speaking Italian.
That's probably true.
Yeah, there are definitely some characters. And I think, I can't remember which movie it is. There, just because I watched all of them recently again together. And I could definitely just, like, make distinctions between them in terms of plot and like characters, but in terms of like the side characters that I think are speaking Italian but get dubbed in English, yeah. I think The Good and the Bad and the Ugly has the most blatant uses of that. But I mean, I digress from our point. So a lot of rich history between us in terms of this movie. But to go into specifically for a few dollars more, like Will said, this is essentially the teaming up of two bounty hunters, Manco, or the man with no name, played by Clint Eastwood, and Colonel Douglas Mortimer.
Does that name mean anything to you?
that's a good part. Very good line in the movie. There are a lot of really cool lines in this movie. Played by Lee Van Cleef, you might remember from The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, and The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. He plays one of Liberty Valance's cronies.
And Escape from New York.
Oh, yeah. Were you with me the time that... Oh, no. I saw that at the Gateway. And Oh, but the reason... Something I wanted to talk about. The reason that I actually saw for a few dollars more is that this movie theater near where me and Will lived...
Which is in an unknown city that you will never
unknown
know.
City that no one ever knows about and not even known by the people who probably listen to this podcast.
But it is El Paso, Texas.
It is El Paso, Texas. We are very proud to be El Pasoans. but they're playing all three of the Dollars trilogy in 35mm in 4K. They're playing them in 4K. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to go, but I knew that my girlfriend would want to go as well. So I had to pick one of the three, which I think that would be...
That's an interesting quandary
there. Yeah, I wanted to pick one of the three to go see in 4K that I think that she would like the most. And I thought to myself, okay, A Fistful of Dollars, really violent, not a lot of like character, not a lot of like emotional connections to different characters. I was like, okay, The Good, Bad, the Ugly, it's 3 hours long. Right. She doesn't really like long movies. And it was on a Friday night, and I was like, I don't know if I want to watch it. Or it was on a Saturday night. Oh, no, it was on a Sunday they were playing. It was Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And I was like, I don't know if I want to watch a movie for 3 hours on a Sunday. So I was like, okay, we're going to go see it for a few dollars more, because I remember liking that a lot. I mean, she really liked it as well. And she doesn't really like action movies or even Westerns really that much. So that's kind of the reason that I saw it this time again. Nice. And we're getting a lot into the histories of us with these, but it's really interesting how we engage with these different like movies. But we can get right into the movie if we wish to as well.
For sure.
Like we mentioned, the plot is Manco and Douglas Mortimer teaming up to get El Indio.
One thing I wanted to touch on is that I think possibly one of the style of movies, or maybe specific to a director. But as I was watching this movie, I think more than anything, this to me feels like a proto Coen Brothers movie in the way that every character, like little minor character, is like quirky and interesting. And I know that like that is one of the reasons that you are such a big fan of The Third Man, which is just like all the side characters are just like fascinating and you can just like quote them and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I thought that about this movie, where it's just like, I was just like continually amazed, just like how every character was memorable and just had like quirks. And there's like the one gag about the hotel owner being like really short. And then the guy that comes down the stairs is also very short. And I was like, I mean, that is like straight up out of a Coen Brothers movie. And then you've got like beyond just like the interesting side characters. One of the like I took a couple notes as I was like watching this, but like this movie, I'm going to say it right here. Never a movie with better faces. Every person's face, starting with Lee Van Cleef, who has one of the great faces of all time.
Yep.
And of course Clint Eastwood does as well. But
what
like,
are the great faces? Oh no, I'll let you finish your point, and then I have a good question.
Yeah, I was just gonna, like, all the side characters just look like they are like railroad workers from 1840. Like, they do not look like people from the 1960s. They look like people from the Old West. And yes, I realize that 1840 is not the Old West. It is too old. But listen, all you tweeters out there. Go, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, what is, because I've actually heard Will use this phrase about other people in movies too, like they have like a really great and interesting face. One of them being Carradine from Stagecoach.
Yeah.
So what is the Mount Rushmore of most interesting faces in movies? So we got What's his name? Is he John or David? I always
get that's John Carradine.
John Carradine from Stagecoach.
I think with you have goatee. To do. Yeah, you have to do Lee Van Cleef, in general.
And he's such a unique like face that whenever you watch like even if you watch like The Simpsons or like any TV show or animated series that like has a Western character in it, they kind of look like Lee Van Cleef.
Well, it's funny because I was just kind of reading through some like Wikipedia pages and stuff after like watching this movie, and apparently, and I don't this could be like internet like junk, but apparently Lee Van Cleef was offered basically refused to get a nose job because to get like more starring roles because I mean he's got this big like hooked like pointed nose and it's awesome, like he looks like a cartoon villain basically. But like he couldn't land a starring role. The other thing is he's only like 41 in this movie.
Yeah, he's not that old.
He looks like he's like 60.
Yeah.
Because he's just he's like balding and does not look like a hero, but he is maybe arguably you could argue he's the hero of the movie.
Yeah.
Rather than Clint Eastwood.
He really kinda is because he's kind of the moral center. Also reason for him kind of looking older, he struggled with alcoholism for a really long time before this movie. This was kind of his comeback. Nice. That started as a result of that. And the comeback ended with Escape from New York.
Yes.
I think that was his last movie.
Which, of course, came out in 1965.
Right at the end. But it's set in 2000. What is it? It's like set in a really... it's like set like 2 years
probably
ago.
Probably in the past.
Yeah, it's set in like 2015.
Yeah.
Which is so funny.
Well, that's Back to Future 2. We might be getting confused.
Oh, yeah. It's like 2006 or something like
that. Yeah, it's like... Yeah, I just watched that not too long ago.
Really?
Again, yeah.
It's a fun
movie. I liked it less than the first time I watched it. I was kind of actually a little saddened because I remember watching it probably on AMC as like a high schooler and being like, this is the best movie I've ever seen. Yeah. And like, I don't think it holds up as well as like The Thing or some Big Trouble in Little China. John Carpenter movies. But the Mount Rushmore, great faces. Yeah. I mean, probably just everyone from For a Few Dollars More. The Telegraph guy? Are you kidding me? Did you see that face?
What's a line that he says so I can get back into this?
He's the guy they threaten, and they're like, Clint Eastwood is like, someone robbed the bank in this town. He's like, no one robbed the bank in this town.
Yeah,
he's like,
I know.
He pulls
know
his gun about. On him. Yeah, and then he ties him up. Yeah. Oh, it's such a great...
We can explore Mount Rushmore of interesting faces as we go throughout the podcast.
Peter Lorre.
Yeah, I'd say Peter Lorre.
Yeah, yeah. Lugosi.
Yeah, it's probably all character actors.
It is, yeah, it is.
Like the most interesting faces.
Right.
I think Lee Marvin has a really interesting face.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good one.
Cat Ballou, another really good Western that I think you'd really like.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah. I think you'd really like it.
I mean, Clint Eastwood has a great face.
He does have a good face, but he's a leading man face.
It's true. He's too handsome to be on the Mount Rushmore of great faces.
Yeah.
You know what? You know who's on the Mount Rushmore of great faces? Abraham Lincoln. Only person to be on both the Mount Rushmores. Daniel Day-Lewis has a good face, though.
He does have a really interesting face.
Yeah, he does.
And I feel like, not to digress too much, but Daniel Day-Lewis's face changes a lot too with the roles that he goes into, which is hard for a leading man usually.
Also, a great leading man face, Jack Nicholson.
Clooney.
Underrated face. I mean, I know he's one of the biggest stars of all time, but great face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really, really interesting face. Up there. Yeah. We can talk more about A Few Dollars More.
You want to move on to ratings and
ratings? We're not really giving this movie too much of the praise that we really like about it. I'm trying to think of the other things that I really like about this movie. There's a really interesting emotional core to this movie. I don't know if I want to get too spoilery about like things that go on, but music plays a very big part in like memory and like bringing up bad memories of specific characters.
I mean, I think it's okay to say, I mean, you can see the movie to kind of get like, I mean, the movie's like 60 years old, I mean, a lot of people probably have not seen it. The villain, El Indio, played by Jean Maria Volante.
He's very good.
He's very good. He's also in A Fistful of Dollars. And
he's much better in this.
Yeah, he is. He has a pocket watch that plays like a, it's like a music box basically. And yeah, every time he kills someone, it's like, it's kind of unexplained. It's like, why does it? It's just like a, he's basically,
it's a very spaghetti Western thing where he always challenges the person he wants to kill to a duel.
Yeah.
And then we'll open his pocket watch and say, when the chimes end, we're going to draw and shoot at each other.
Well, that's, I found that to be like very modern, because he's like a sick and twisted villain. Mm-hmm. Like there's no, he could, he's just got a shoot psychology. The person. Yeah. It's like Two-Face flipping the coin. Like mm-hmm. he could just shoot him. But and the music is kind of like haunting, and they play it like multiple times throughout the movie. And then there is a sort of twist, or like they do a very interesting thing with that towards the end. That is like genuinely like a really like, whoa, what is going on?
Yeah. And if you're not really paying attention, you might miss it.
Yeah.
Cause it's not a throwaway line, but it's said kind of nonchalantly,
right,
which really ties everything together and kind of brings all three main characters, Manco, Douglas Mortimer, and El Indio, kind of together.
I was kind of thinking as I was watching this movie that as much as I love Eli Wallach's performance in Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, like, I think he's the star of that movie.
Oh,
like,
yeah. He's definitely.
He's so good. Like, how cool would it have been to have Jean-Maria Vellante play his character and do, like, because it's the same thing. It's like, Lee Van Cleef is not playing the same character in Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Right.
Like, he's playing just a different character. It would have been really cool to see those three actors again in like completely new roles, because I do think he would have played that character really well.
Right. Tuco, you mean?
Tuco, yeah. I was like, why can't I think of his name?
I love Tuco.
Yeah. You're the son of a thousand bastards. I was just
you're going to
that.
Shoot, don't talk.
Yeah. There's also a great scene in For a Few Dollars More that when El Indio is like getting his revenge on the guy that turned him in, or like basically caught him, because in the beginning of the movie he's broken out of prison and it's in a church and he challenges him to a duel, and the amount of sweat on that guy's face throughout the whole movie, he is
drenched
in sweat, but in that particular scene it is like borderline airplane levels of sweat, which is like a comical, like basically looks like he just got out of a pool. And I found that to be kind of funny.
Yeah.
But, he's very sweaty throughout.
Another thing I really like about El Indio is that, kind of going back to, like, him having a psychology, this is one of the earliest examples of just, like, a really complex villain, because there are different points in this movie you're like, wow, he is depressed.
Right.
Like, and I don't think I could say that about, like, any other villain in many movies, just that he is... Yeah. Probably like experiencing clinical depression.
Yeah, but at the same time, he's done like truly horrible things. So
and you can see that he's not necessarily reconciling with them, but kind of combating with them or working against them. Not that he wants to be better, but like that he's actually tortured by the things that he does.
Yeah,
and it's at that part that I think is fascinating. And there's a Mexican standoff at the end, which again is a precursor to The Good, Bad, and the Ugly.
Yeah, it is very similar. But the Good and Bad and the Ugly one is a little more like
long.
It's longer and it's more like extravagant.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
The music. I mean, we should talk about the music. Ennio's music is phenomenal. The music in The Good, Bad, and the Ugly is probably one
it's
of the
more
best.
Iconic.
Yeah, probably one of the best and original and iconic scores. But I like this one a lot.
Yeah,
you can tell how it's working towards all the stuff that he does also in The Good, Bad, and the Ugly, because not that a lot of the music cues are the same, but there are different things that you can see are kind of borrowed. Like during the big Mexican standoff and For a Few Dollars More, there's this big trumpet theme that is played kind of over the chimes, and it works very well together. And it reminds you a lot of like The Ecstasy of Gold, which is the big song in The Good, Bad, and the Ugly. And there are just other moments as well that I think kind of you can see the evolution going towards Good, Bad, and the Ugly.
It feels very modern too, the use of like the music. You know the term for this.
Le motif.
Well, I was going to say music that's occurring within the world.
Oh, diegetic music.
Diegetic music. Yeah, the use of like diegetic music from the chime that is like molded into the score of the movie is very cool. And it feels very modern.
And it often, and the really, really cool thing is that it starts diegetic, meaning it comes from the scene. It builds into like a really like extravagant, like obviously extra diegetic, because you do not see a full orchestra there.
They turn around.
And then
it's like a Mel Brooks gag.
Yeah, probably. And then slowly like cuts back to just the diegetic music, which is such a cool thing to do. But yeah, I think the modernism of this of these movies are really cool, especially seeing them in 4K. If you have the opportunity to see these movies in 4K, I would strongly recommend doing that, because I felt like this movie was filmed yesterday when I saw it. It was so cool to see it that way.
That is the thing. It's like so much of this movie feels very modern, but at the same time, I think it is combined with the pacing of a much older movie or the pacing of like an old Western especially. Which I personally really like. So I wrote down, because Lee Van Cleef and Clint Eastwood meet in this movie at 52 minutes.
Oh, I didn't even know
And it's a 2-hour and 10-minute movie. And then the next 4 minutes consist of
them Clint shooting Eastwood, each other's hats.
Shooting Lee Van Cleef's hat off. It takes from 52 minutes to 56 minutes before that scene is over. And so there's just so much at the beginning of this movie building up all three of our like main characters, Clint, you know, Clint Eastwood, Lee Van Cleef, and El Indio. And, they don't like combine at all. And then, it's just like the pacing, it's that like 60s and 70s style pacing that I love a lot. Like the pacing you see in like the original Star Wars or something like that, where it's just like, it really takes this time to get going, but you just kind of like stew in the world and stew in the characters. And then once it gets going, bam, it's like just like pedal to the metal towards the end.
And again, you can kind of see like this stuff building to the pacing in Good, Bad, and the Ugly, where literally nothing happens for an hour. Which is kind of putting it very lightly, but the main like impetus of the movie, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, which is the search for gold essentially, does not get introduced until well after an hour into the movie of a 3-hour and 5-minute movie. Also the ironic thing is that, going back to what I said about like I had to choose one of these three movies to like go see like which one's the most accessible, and after watching for a few dollars more, I was like, I have to see The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly in 4K. And so I saw it the next day, and it was amazing. So if you have the opportunity to see any of these movies in 4K, they're beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, we should say that, like, we're talking about for a few dollars more, but if you have never seen any of the Dollars trilogy,
watch them all.
Yeah, I'm absolutely watch them all. It is, like, it's such a pivotal, like, film series. And, I mean, definitely watch Once Upon a Time in the West as well. Like,
I'm not a huge fan of Once Upon a Time in the West. I do not really care for it.
I do not care for Once Upon a Time in America.
I love Once Upon a Time in America.
Interesting.
I know.
I'm trying to think if I had any other things I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, there's a lot to talk about with these movies.
There is. I mean, this is sort of the Hellboy 2 thing of just like, when you really like everything in a movie, it's kind of hard to like narrow down to like what to talk about. But
Something that came up to me is that I think that Sergio Leone knows how to start a movie, and it usually has nothing to do with like anything that goes
it's
on.
It's just atmospheric, basically.
Atmospheric, and also just like the opening shots of a lot of his movies are just so iconic. Like, and you might even not know that they're iconic. Like the opening shot of For a Few Dollars More is you just see like a very small thing on the horizon, and it's a man on a horse just kind of like riding kind of towards the camera, and then all of a sudden there's a gunshot and he falls off his horse, and then the credits roll. And then in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, it's just a blue sky. You don't see anything for like 10 seconds, and then a man's face like inches away from the camera just shows up, and it's there for 5 seconds, and it's so cool. So he really knows how to do that opening shot really well. And kind of like you said, like this reminds you of like a Coen Brothers movie. I think we'd be remiss to mention like the influence that these movies have on Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah. I mean, Good, the Bad, and the Ugly is like his favorite movie. Yeah.
And is the inspiration for a lot of the things he does, especially like Django Unchained, which is, I wouldn't say his version of The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, but is his version of a Western.
Well, and The Hateful Eight was literally scored by Ennio Morricone.
Right. And he finally won his Oscar, too. Yeah. And that's a good score. I like that score, too. But yeah, there's a lot of really good stuff in this movie. So if you haven't seen it before, or it's been a long time, oh, definitely check it out. And I mean, we haven't even talked about like how cool the dialogue is in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, another thing I would say is like, I know that there are like probably a lot of people that have probably historically never cared for Westerns. And my pitch I've given this pitch to people before, which is that there is a big difference between like a 1940s Hollywood Western right. and a spaghetti Western. They are so drastically different. Like, this movie is violent. It is like entertaining. Like, you are meant to like watch this movie and eat a big bucket of popcorn in a theater and just enjoy the hell out of it.
Like, watch that people is, like, shoot each other's hats in the sky
exactly
for 8 minutes.
Like, the scene towards the beginning, I actually rewound and watched this like 3 times because I don't know why, I just find it so like compelling to watch, is when there's the first guy that Lee Van Cleef like kills, the guy with like the messed up teeth with like the hay colored hair that he like shoots off his horse.
Yeah,
that scene is just like, I just find it so cool. It's just like, it's just like bang in the editing and just like the whole way it is put together. I was just like, I have to watch that again. Like, that was amazing.
The way that they that both characters are introduced is really cool. Basically, on two individual bounties. Like, I really like the scene where Manco, Clint Eastwood's character, is introduced, where he rolls into a saloon, it starts without speaking, playing poker with another person who's trying to collect the bounty, and after he wins, the guy asks him, "I didn't hear what we were betting for," and he just goes, "Your life."
Like, that's the other thing, is like, as good as this movie is, like, they are, like, Sergio Leone's movies are like meant to be a little campy. Like, they are very they're pulpy, right?
Oh, like, yeah, that's like, they have a lot of fun with
them. Exactly. And that's why, like, if you were like, oh, I don't really like Westerns, like, I try to watch you know, like, some John Wayne movie or something.
The Searchers, even though it's a really good movie.
I have mixed feelings about The Searchers.
I don't think it's grown well.
It did not age well. What do you mean? A movie
about racism?
You don't think a movie that villainizes the Comanches?
I think you mean the Comanche.
Yeah. Oh, that's what I was going to say, and then I decided against it. But
in the words of Ethan Edwards, right? That's his name?
Yeah. His name is definitely Ethan. Yeah.
Ethan Hawke. There's so many good lines in this movie. Yeah, I want to just like name them all. I can't even think
of them. I know. We might have to just like basically say that, I mean, this is a phenomenal movie. If you haven't seen it, you should watch the whole Dollars trilogy.
This is probably the most accessible one. So if you don't feel like watching a movie that's a remake of a Japanese movie or a really long movie, watch this one. Because I think it's also probably the most modern out of all three, even though there's a lot of modern things in all three of them, in terms of like pacing, even though it does take a long time for.
Yeah, I mean, this is a movie you could together. Like. There are movies that are like event movies. Like, if you're gonna sit down, if you're gonna like watch Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, you kind of need to plan ahead as to like when you're gonna put that on, because it's really long and it's like a sit up straight and watch it movie. This is a movie that you can like more easily just sort of like it's not on Netflix. You have to like figure out a way to watch it, but. Yeah, you can like watch this in a night, and it's like barely over 2 hours. It's like the length that modern comedies are.
Oh God,
it's probably barely longer than Baywatch.
It's probably funnier than most modern comedies.
It is. It definitely
is. A lot of things that it's if it does. Ugh.
Yeah, and I know we basically, how good this movie is that we went the entire episode without talking about like how cool Clint Eastwood looked in 1964. Because, like, just I would just watch B-roll footage of him walking around and just, like, smoking his little cigar.
Cigar is so cool.
Oh, I mean, when I was in high school, I did, like, a big, like, art project where I drew this giant charcoal sketch of him from this movie. Probably from The Good, the Bad, the Ugly is what the shot was from. But him wearing that, like, shawl thing that his character wears. And you know, he got paid $50,000 to this movie. And Lee Van Cleef, I looked this up, got paid $17,000.
Wow.
Kind of funny. I don't know how much that's worth today.
But. And then probably made a lot more for Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Yeah. It was,
Well, the title, this is something that I looked up before this. The title for A Few Dollars More was originally supposed to be intended to be ironic, because it was supposed to be a cash grab after a Fistful of Dollars was really popular. That's funny. So it was literally for A Few Dollars More.
Yeah.
Also, like, another thing that I think doesn't get talked about enough about like the Dollars trilogy is that essentially Clint Eastwood is the same character in every single movie, but they do little things that make sure that it's distinctive in every single one of them. Right. And this, I think, is the coolest, where he doesn't use his right hand for anything except shooting, which when I told my girlfriend that afterwards, she was like, I didn't even notice that. But if you like, he's got like that leather strap on his right. hand that's just for shooting, and he only uses it to shoot people. And that's such a cool thing. And
Colonel Mortimer has that sweet like pistol on the little extender that
he uses. Oh, yeah. He's got the little case that goes on his force. So cool. Oh, gosh. So cool. Yeah, there's a lot of really cool and just very genre specific things about this movie.
Yeah. But
we can definitely get into ratings and recs.
We better, because we could probably talk about this all night. And yeah, I was very upset that I rented this movie on iTunes, because I was, as soon as I watched it, I was like, dang it, I should just bought it, because I would definitely watch this again or watch scenes from it. But you want to start this time?
Or yeah, I can definitely do that. So, ooh, man. So I think I've put myself in a precarious spot by giving Hellboy 2 4 stars, and now I have to base everything off of that scale. I think this is probably a better movie than Hellboy 2. But my sheer enjoyment of that movie probably just kind of, and also wanting to be different from Will, propelled it into the 4-star range. I think this is a 3.5-star movie, reserving that 4 stars for my favorite movies. And then, and not to say this isn't one of my favorite movies, I really, really enjoy this movie. And then also like phenomenal movies like The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly would probably be a 4-star. But so I'm going to say this is 3.5. And then I'm going to say, in terms of action, I'm going to give 9 out of 10 Wild the Hunchbacks.
Oh, you know who that was.
It's yeah, Klaus it's Kinski. Kinski yeah. from Akira.
Yeah.
The Wrath of God.
Yeah.
I saw Wild the Hunchback, and I said I must have him in my movie. Real quick, Werner Herzog.
All right. Well, I'm going to play the Max character on this episode, and I'm going to give this movie 4 out of 4 stars.
Wow.
I do think it is...
So what is The Good and the Bad and the Ugly?
4 stars.
4 stars.
Okay, yeah, good. I'd probably give them both 4 stars.
I might do that too.
But I think this is easily one of the best Westerns ever made, as in hotels.
That's what the hotel was named.
Yeah. And just one of the best movies ever made. I think it's great. And yeah, in terms of action, I mean, this is like a really suspenseful movie. I wouldn't say it's got like tremendous, like thrilling action sequences. But I'd probably give it 7.5 out of 10 dollars.
More dollars.
Yeah. Do you want to give your rec?
Yeah, so my recommendation is that I have been listening to the podcast Lore of late. That's L-O-R-E. If you're not familiar with it, it's a podcast by Aaron Mankey, who is a fictional horror writer. And if you are really interested in things that go bump in the night, or even like folklore stuff like vampires, Bigfoot, ghost, other supernatural stuff. He's a fantastic storyteller for a lot of the tales that have occurred in real life. So I want to suggest listening to that. And it's a very easy podcast to get into because they're like 25-minute episodes. Very, very short.
Yeah, I've listened to a few episodes of that show. It's good.
Cool.
I'm going to recommend...
An overwhelmingly positive co-recommendation from Will.
I'm tired, man. I'm going to recommend a movie. It is another Western movie that I think is it's from a similar era, and it's a unique Western. It is a Robert Altman film, McCabe and Mrs. Miller, which I saw for the first time probably about a year ago. And if you don't like Westerns, this movie is different enough from any other Western that it doesn't feel like one at all. It is stars Warren Beatty as a sort of a gambler, he runs like card games and stuff, who rolls into sort of a developing town in, I want to say, like Wyoming or like Oregon maybe, and sets up shop and begins to open up a business with the local madam there. And it is an Altman film, so there's lots of overlapping dialogue, and it's like hard to understand sometimes, and the plot is, you know, sort of it doesn't exactly follow like a linear, like convenient story, but it's a very good film. I liked it a lot. And I only watched it the one time, but I've been thinking about giving it another watch, and that's my rec.
Man, I probably should have recommended a Western because I love Western.
You recommended a lot earlier, so.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I did. Some other ones you might want to check out. Unforgiven is really, really good.
Yeah, it's one of my dad's favorite movies.
Oh, it's so, so good. It's 1992, and it is directed by Clint Eastwood. It was, no, it was not the first one that he directed. It was one of the later, it's the last Western that he directed.
He directed Pale Rider.
Yes. I believe he directed another, he's directed a couple Westerns.
Yeah.
But again, I digress. That is a really good movie. It probably has one of my favorite lines of any Western in it, which is Clint Eastwood enters a saloon and he says, "Who owns this shithole?" And the owner comes out and says, "I am the proprietor of this establishment."
That's good.
So I'll suggest that as well. It's a good watch.
Yeah. All right, well, brings us to the end of another fun episode where we talked about a movie we love. We went a little long on this one, but it's a good movie. It's worth it.
We went a few minutes more.
All right, that'll do it for us.
Thanks all for tuning in.
Yeah, we'll see you guys soon.
I saw Wild, the Hunchback, and I said I must have him in my movie.